I am gross and perverted. I'm obsessed and deranged. I have existed for years, but very little has changed. I am the tool of the government and industry, too, for I am destined to rule and regulate you. I may be vile and pernicious, but you can't look away. I make you think I'm delicious with the stuff that I say. I am the best you can get. Have you guessed me yet? I am the slime oozing out from your TV set. You will obey me while I lead you. Eat the garbage that I feed you till the day that we don't need you. Don't go to hell for help. No one will need you. Your mind is totally controlled. It has been stuffed into my mold, and you will do as you are told until the rights to you are sold. That's right, folks. Don't touch that dial. Well, I am the slime from your video, oozing along on your living room floor. I am the slime from your video. Can't stop the slime, people look at me go. I am the slime from your video, oozing along on your living room floor. That's right, folks. Don't touch that dial. Don't click that mouse. Don't tap that tablet. Leave the driving to us. We control the transmission. Just leave it to us. But you're in luck. We are not the United States government. We are not the National Security Agency. We are not even the Central Intelligence Agency. I'm Chuck Gregory, and we are the New American Dream Radio Show. And we stream to you live every Thursday from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We have a dream of a better America, a better world, and that's why we bring you this show each week. We have been at it since February 3, 2011, and we've been on Revolution Radio since December 2013. But this is the very first show in our new time slot, and we welcome any of you who haven't heard us before. We hope you'll like what we have to say and make us a regular part of your Thursday night routine. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palacek, an American writer.
Chuck, tonight we welcome special guests Phil Peruzzio, Sherwood Ross, Mickey Z, Andre Vilcek, and Frank Cordero. And so tonight we are joined together for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Duluth, Minnesota, Coral Gables, Florida, Port Orange, Florida, Queens, Astoria, New York City, Calais, France, the gates of Offutt Air Force Base, and wherever you are. I recommend it for this week, False Flag Weekly News with Jim Fetzer and Kevin Barrett. The underlying concept of the New American Dream Radio Show, which began with the New American Dream website back at the dawn of the Obama era, was that there are no wrong questions. If you have listened to the show before, you have heard our intro, the American-Russian novel, All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Hour. And maybe you wonder what the hell that means. Well, to me, it means that we are living in a Russian novel, but we think this is America. We are characters inside a Russian novel, in the time of the Soviet Union with Pravda, TASS, but we just don't know it yet, or maybe won't ever. But still, that is where we are. All we need is more vodka. The underlying concept of the New American Dream radio show is that the old American dream is pretty crappy and pretty stupid to want a new house. And then you get it and wonder what all the fuss was about. We've got those, and it turns out it wasn't that great. Big house, bigger yard, five-piece toaster, and still you end up killing yourself buck naked some bright summer morning out in the zinnias with a glass of Chardonnay and your father's 45. If we really believe in this big concept, America, well, there's more, and it isn't to be found in stuff. It is to be found in knowledge, in the spiritual life, in high concept, being good, just because being good and loving each other and loving nature is the right thing to do. And we're going to do that no matter what. That's what America is really about. We've come close to that high concept at times with Emma Goldman, with the Berrigan Brothers, with national parks, and with the Chicago Seven, with the Civil Rights Movement, with Sesame Street, and with Bobby Kennedy. But since then, we have strayed a far ways from the path. And every single one of us knows that we'll never, ever tell that life in these United States would be so much less boring if the Thanksgiving adult big table conversation was not limited by social mores and cowardice to the Dallas Cowboys, good gas mileage, and dandelion spray. If we could open up that conversation to include who did 9/11, who killed Wellstone, who was that wearing that Obama mask behind that podium, to include Bigfoot and Sandy Hook, Boston, UFOs, then each year Uncle Bill would feel not so much like slipping away from the Thanksgiving table and going to the garage to smoke and hang himself with a chimney cleaning rope by jumping off Grandpa John's old olive green Chrysler. Who knows how many times Bill has been sent away to long sentences in Siberia by the roll of the eyes of the other adults at the Thanksgiving adult big table. Well, the New American Dream Radio Show is here because of Uncle Bill. It is he who we had in mind when we started this project in February of 2011. There's one damn person in their apartment alone who appreciates this stuff we are talking about week after week, year after year. If there is one lonely person who discovers that she is not the only one, then it's all worth it. And we think that it is.
And now, some samples from the Target and Walmart Hiroshima Nagasaki Day Phil Berrigan Plowshares Movement Greeting Card Collection, a card designed with you in mind. Nuclear weapons are the scourge of the earth. To mine for them, manufacture them, deploy them, use them, is a curse against God, the human family, and the earth itself. Philip Berrigan. Before every action, plowshare activists grapple with their doubts. Fear speaks to us, attempting to beguile us with the many rewards of silence. Just acquiesce, says fear, and things will be fine. Don't rock the boat. Don't upset the apple cart. Play it safe. Accept a life of quiet desperation. In the Gospels, Jesus exhorts his disciples to transcend their fears. He encourages them to leave status, security, friends, and family behind. We can't deny our fears any more than we can ignore the poverty in our neighborhood, but fear need not dominate our lives. Our critics say that attacking atomic weapons with ball-peen hammers is an act of violence. Destroying property, they insist, is a form of violence. At best, it is a curious argument, one I've heard many times before. Warheads whose sole purpose is to vaporize cities are hardly to be thought legitimate property. Bombs that indiscriminately murder millions of men, women, and children are not property. Why then do we make supersonic bombers and fast-track submarines into idols, insisting that they are proper? In our day, the law legalizes nuclear weapons. The slaughter in Hiroshima and Nagasaki was legal. The spread of nuclear weapons has been legal. Atomic warfare that threatens to spawn a nuclear winter destroying life on Earth is legal. The poisoning of millions of human beings and the contamination of our air, food, and water supplies is legal. Jesus Christ practiced direct action, as did the Jewish prophets and other nonviolent militants. Long before our revolution, Americans resorted to direct action in struggles against injustice. In a capitalist society, there are no other means for representation, redress, or justice. To vote is political window dressing. It makes not the slightest political difference. If it did, the American people would soon lose this right. The only means for fighting judicial corruption, corporate greed, worker exploitation, police brutality, and militarism is direct action. The industrial workers of the world, the Wobblies, were right. You don't vote with the ballot, you vote with your feet and with your life. In the 60s, many people embraced violent revolution. I recall one conversation with young radicals who were leaving for the National Democratic Convention in Chicago. They were armed with chains, were preparing for street battles with the pigs. Revolutionaries, they said, must fight violence with violence. I replied that the means we use to fight for justice are the ends, In our struggle for liberation, we must not adopt the oppressor's means. Otherwise, we become the oppressor. Some samples. From the Target in Walmart to Hiroshima Nagasaki Day, Philip Berrigan Plowshares Movement greeting card collection. A card designed with you in mind. And now, Remembering Hiroshima, a poem by Daniel Berrigan, Shadow on the Rock. At Hiroshima, there's a museum, and outside the museum, there's a rock. And on that rock, there's a shadow. The shadow is all that remains of the human being who stood there on August 6, 1945, when the nuclear age began. In the most real sense of the word, that is the choice before us. We shall either end war and the nuclear arms race in this generation, or we will become shadows on the rock.
Our first guest of the evening is Andrei Bilcek. Andrei Bilcek is a globe-trotting journalist and truth teller. How he does it, really, I have no idea, but I'm anxious to find out. He's a novelist, philosopher, investigative journalist, filmmaker, photographer, and playwright. He has covered dozens of war zones and conflicts from Bosnia and Peru to Sri Lanka, Congo, and Timor-Leste. He was born in 1963 in St. Petersburg, Russia. His books include Fighting Against Western Imperialism, Exposing the Lies of the Empire, Archipelago of Fear, Point of No Return, Western Terror from Potosi to Baghdad. And here is Andrei Bilcek.
So my latest book, which is called Exposing Lies of the Empire, is actually a 1,000-page book reduced to 820 because the printer couldn't handle 1,000 books. It's full of chapters that are showing the destruction done by the Empire all over the world, basically in all the places where the countries refuse to succumb or refuse to surrender to Western imperialism. So there are chapters on South Africa, on Zimbabwe, on Eritrea, but also on Venezuela, Russia, China, and many other places. So basically, in the last 2.5 years, I had been traveling all over the world and producing one book after another, trying to combine philosophy, but also investigative journalism, and being a novelist and a writer, I make these books very lively. So they're not boring, really. They really expose what is happening. I'm using dialogues, I'm using direct quotes, even poetry if it's necessary. So I'm fighting on all fronts. I'm writing books, and I'm also making and producing films for big television stations that are in the opposition to the Empire, including Telesur in South America and Press TV.
I know you sent us some links. Will our viewers be able to use these links to see some of the video as well as to buy the book?
Well, the links which I hope will be uploaded, will allow your viewers your listeners to actually go to my website, and from my website they can access all articles, all reports that I produce, and they go usually in many different languages. So there are reports in English, but they are translated to French, Chinese, Russian, Italian, you name it. They also can go to my interviews that are done by the television networks, like RT or Press TV and so on. And they can also access some films. But, of course, when the films are being broadcasted by big station like Telesur in South America, it all depends whether they release it or not. Some films are released for free, some are not, but definitely there are some trailers and teasers, like the film that I'm just finishing with Noam Chomsky on Western terrorism. They published a book together under the same name in 26 languages now, but also it is going to be a film which is being edited in Japan and released in about 2 months. So yes, they can access interviews, they can access you know, a lot of things, but most important that they go to my site, which is which will be obviously available at your radio station.
Okay, what is the URL for the site? Because some people listen and then don't go to the
No, it's better they just go to your site because they cannot spell my name. The URL is my second name, which is unspellable. VLTCHEK, but it's pointless. I mean, from my experience, you can give it over the radio. Nobody will ever manage. That's why I ask all radio stations. I do them a favor. I give interviews, but in exchange, they have to put all my links in a functional order.
Yes. Well, of course, we're going to put the link up, but some people listen in several ways. So anyhow, we got it out there. It's Bolchek, was that .com? VLTCHEK.com?
Yes, yes,
okay,
yes.
Good.
But, yeah.
Great. Now, tell me about, you said something about how the West is, well, you wanted to talk about the immigration crises in Greece, well, everywhere, and how the West is destabilizing. So, please.
Oh, actually, we are having extremely serious situation now, and tens of millions of people are on the move, and in the West, particularly in Europe, there is an absolutely ridiculous and appalling response to this. So we have countries like Libya, we have countries like Iraq, but also Syria, destabilized directly, destroyed by the West, literally. And then we have countries that are suffering from sanctions, and they are destabilized in a most horrible manner, like countries like Eritrea. So we have 10 million of people on the move because they cannot survive or they cannot really anymore live safely in their countries. And these people are moving towards different parts of the world, particularly now towards Europe, or they are stuck in the refugee camps, like in Turkey, where 1.8 million people are now in the camps that are, you know, mainly housing people from Syria, but also from Iraq. We have 2 million people in Lebanon, in a country, tiny country, which where refugees are now, the number of refugees is approaching the original number of the population. So recently I was working in Greece and Turkey. Turkey is hosting, as we said, 1.8 million. Now, some people don't want to stay in Turkey. Some people want to continue to the European Union. So they go undertake tremendously dangerous journey over the sea, where they are being attacked by pirates, by mafias, but also by the coast guards of both countries. And they are trying to reach European Union, but they are not really welcomed at all. They are in the camps that are appalling, and Greece, which is under direct attack from the economically, financially, from Germany and from its so-called allies at the European Union, itself goes through total economical destruction now. So the refugees come, and if they are sick, they cannot get any help because the Greek medical system is collapsing. Then we have refugees coming from North Africa. They come towards, they come from Libya towards Italy, towards France. These people are also going through extremely dangerous journeys. Thousands are dying. But what is not understood in Europe, what they don't want to understand in Europe, that it was the United States and European Union that destroyed Syria, I mean, that destroyed Libya. And in fact, these people used to live in a very rich country, and they now they are forced to leave. And also the people from Central Africa, where France and other countries are destabilized the whole region, these people are moving through Libya to the north, and there is no Libya anymore to give them jobs. Libya used to absorb these refugees, these you know, economic migrants. Now there is no Libya, so it's absolute mess, and millions are moving north. And these people are treated like like animals. They are treated with absolutely, they live in absolutely despicable conditions, despite the fact that the West created the situation in which they are. So it is directly responsible. Both the United States and Europe are responsible for these people, but they don't take this responsibility whatsoever. So tomorrow I'm going to the city, I'm in Paris right now, I'm going to the city of Calais. Calais is on the where the Eurotunnel begins. So this is where the train, goes down to the tunnel and goes to England. And this tunnel is flooded with refugees, and people are dying. They get hit by the trains. They get, they are caught by the French police. Brits are chasing them. It's an absolute nightmare, and it's being projected in Europe as some sort of, crisis. Well, there is only 25,000 people who are, asking for political asylum on the territory of the UK, which is a major ally of the United States in destruction of Africa and the Middle East. So basically, the Britain is even thinking about using army now, to protect themselves from these refugees who are trying to reach British shores by any possible means. And in France, in Calais, there is a refugee camp which is called Le Jungle, the jungle, can you imagine? And they, this is where people live in absolutely despicable conditions, and they try to break through the barbed wires and enter the channel, and there are trains going 300 kilometers or 200 miles an hour. People are dying. It's an absolute, absolute nightmare. And it is not a crisis because of this, because of the number of people. It is the crisis because the U.S. and Europe destroyed entire regions, entire continents, the Middle East, Africa, and they are not taking responsibility for these people.
Well, We're getting a little short on time. What I'd like to ask you now is, what can be done at this point?
Well, what can be done is very simple. The European Union has to open its eyes and ears and basically be honest. They have to accept what Turkey did. I mean, Turkey very openly says, look, we are destroying these countries next to our door. We are playing little North America in the Middle East. So it is our responsibility to house these people and to take care of them. If we destroy the country next door, let us feed these people. And they are feeding 1.8 million people already on their territory. And the Britain, which is destabilizing half of the world, cannot feed 25,000 people? This is ridiculous. So if they really want to play these war games, at least take care of the refugees that the refugee wave that you trigger.
Well, I have the feeling that this is but the tip of the iceberg, that this destabilization is going to continue and get worse, and it's going to affect many more areas, and we're going to end up with refugees just all over the world.
Well, we definitely will. If we are going to continue what we are doing also in Latin America, because there are attempts to destabilize the left-wing progressive governments all over the world. Of course, if we are going to destabilize, if the West is going to destabilize everything, then they are going to have not tens of millions, they will have probably billions of refugees. And therefore, yes, I mean, these attacks against independent and relatively well-developed countries like Syria or Libya or Iraq will continue in other parts of the world, then we will have a global, absolute global nightmare. With hundreds of millions or billions of refugees on the move.
Well, we really are out of time, but I just want to say I admire the work that you do, and it's really something that you go right to these places and talk to the people and make things happen. We're really lucky to have you joining us on the show.
Oh, definitely, Chuck. A great pleasure. And I will talk to you soon.
Talk to you next month. Thank you.
Definitely.
Maybe sooner. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Enjoy your
extra big-ass fries.
You didn't give me no fries. I got an empty box.
Would you like another
extra big-ass fries?
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford
oh,
to make
no,
a purchase.
No.
I'm sorry you're
come
having
on.
Trouble.
My
I'm
kids
sorry
are starving.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now our next guest, Frank Cordero, during the annual protests at the gates of Offutt Air Force Base, protests that have been occurring every year since the early 1980s, often attended by members of the Catholic Worker Movement. At times, people cross the line and go to prison. Frank Cordero is a member of the Des Moines Catholic Worker. He's a former Catholic priest. He has himself spent years and years in federal prison for crossing the line at Offutt. Chuck spoke to Frank this morning. Frank is speaking to us from the gates of Offutt Air Force Base.
You were telling me that there are four people demonstrating, and did you say this is the 39th year? 38th year. Wow.
Yeah.
You're very faithful to this project.
Yes. Yes, we are. One could say that. You know, people look back on the 20th century and they think about one of the most important, significant events. And on everybody's list, the top five somewhere is the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. And indeed, it is the very clarion singular mark in history that is both the truth we're up against and the lie we have to dismantle. And of course, the lie is that we needed to drop the Hiroshima bombs and the Nagasaki bomb, and that's a lie. The war was over already. There was no way that that Japan was going to keep fighting for indefinite. And we dropped that bomb because we wanted to beat the Russians from getting into the war in the Pacific. And we didn't do that well because of the mistakes, the missteps in Asia after the war created the Korean War, where 4 million people were killed. I just got done visiting South Korea and the island of Jeju Island, where they are building a Navy base in which the U.S. will spring. And it's what Obama's talking about is Asian pivot. And provoke the Chinese. So the politics of the Cold War communism continues to dictate realities all over the world, in Asia and one of them. And it's all based on the lie we set up after World War II, that we saved the world and that the bomb that we dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki saved lives.
What might have saved some American lives, American soldiers' lives, but that's about it.
Well, too often Americans think those are the only lives that matter, and that's tragic.
Yes, it
not.
Is. Exactly so, yeah. Is everyone in this demonstration part of the Des Moines Catholic Worker?
Well, the four of us are Catholic workers, and then just had a Francis Mendenhall. We got friends from the Omaha area periodically drop by in the 3.5-day effort. So we have a friend from Omaha with us right now.
Well, that's good. Good.
Yeah.
So it's 3.5 days. So you're more or less camping out there.
Well, we're here from from 8 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Then okay. We're held up in the basement of St. John's Church at Creighton University. The parish there, the Jesuit parish there, allows us to use their basement for hospitality.
Now, after 38 years, the air base is probably pretty used to having you there. But I know in some years past, people got arrested during these demonstrations.
Oh yeah, we've run the full gamut. In the early years, like everyone else, the anti-nuclear peace movement was thriving in the 80s. Ronald Reagan scared the hell out of us, rightfully so. But with the fall of the Soviet Union, a lot of that peace energy has dissipated and redeveloped. Certainly, in our area, it has to do with the environment and agribusiness confronting those things, and they're all part of the modern way things are done, where the planet is at risk, and when we're at war, we're risking the planet the most, and when we're at peace, we're just destroying it a bit at a time, but it's all the same. The war economy and the peace economy is all geared to the 1%, and it's killing the planet and the human race. So these are very dire times. And the first step towards the light is to speak the truth. And that is the hardest thing, Americans. We just can't get the truth. We just can't get the truth. And we keep lying to ourselves. And the primary lie that covers all the nationalistic security lies is this lie we made 70 years ago about dropping the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And we've been lying ever since.
You know, one of the lies you actually kind of bought into in your statement there. You said when we're at peace and when we're at war. I'm not convinced that we haven't been at war the entire time.
Well, that is the nature of modern warfare and modern capitalism. They're intertwined. Post-World War II. And of course, you know, I don't know how old you are, Chuck, but I'm 65, 64 years old. I'm part of that baby boomer generation. We're the people who are now running the world. And my whole generation has lived off the ill-gotten gains of World War II. And it's those lies that have crept into every way of life.
Well, that's exactly so. And I'm a year or two younger than you are. So, but we've been through a lot of the same, seen a lot of the same things because, you know, we're the same generation, at least.
That was Frank Cordero. And I talked to him earlier today. He was at Offutt Air Force Base, and he'll be there for 3 days in vigil in honor of Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
And now please join us for another episode of Beltway Sandy Snore Big Time Journalism Horror. When we last left Sandy, he had just received, as he sat with a friend at the Bulldog Bistro in downtown D.C., a subpoena to appear at the next session of the House Un-American Activities Commission. He read the formal paper silently while his prime rib cooled to the taste of prime tuna. The committee will be reconvening next week to investigate un-American activities, such as the murder of children in Iraq and Afghanistan and the restricting of personal freedoms in the United States through the so-called Patriot Act, as well as the infiltration of American organizations by members of certain domestic clandestine terror groups. Are you now, or have you ever been, a member of the Central Intelligence Agency? Tune in next week for the exciting conclusion of Sandy Snore, Big Time Journalism Horror, when we will find Sandy standing at the gates of Leavenworth Federal Penitentiary, having been driven there by a soccer mom minivan caravan that has also delivered Anderson Cooper, Wolf Blitzer, Bill O'Reilly, Rachel Maddow, and Dan Rather. And now, another episode of Jane Goodall, Animal Rights Terrorist. We find Jane in the North Woods of Wisconsin writing her blog, Postcards from the Hedge, swinging by vine from tree to tree with all her friends, the bears and the bumblebee. She writes,
"Those who liberate animals from factory farms are considered terrorists under U.S. law. If caught, they can get a 10-year prison term and a $250,000 fine under the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. That is the punishment faced by two activists who were arrested in Oakland, California last month and charged with freeing more than 5,700 minks in 2013, destroying breeding records, and vandalizing other property of the fur industry. Only in the insanity of corporate America can nonviolent animal rights activists be charged as terrorists, while a white supremacist who gunned down African Americans in a South Carolina church is charged on criminal counts. Only in the insanity of America can Wall Street financiers implode the global economy through massive acts of fraud causing widespread suffering and be rewarded with trillions of dollars in government bailouts. Only in the insanity of America can government leaders wage wars that are defined as criminal acts of aggression under international law and then remain unchallenged in positions of power and influence. All this makes no sense in an open society, but it makes perfect sense in our species of corporate totalitarianism in which life, especially the life of the vulnerable, is expendable. And corporate profit alone is protected and sanctified as the highest good. The animal agriculture industry causes suffering, death, and environmental degradation to humans as well as animals on a scale equaled only by the arms industry and the fossil fuel industry. And by eating meat and dairy products, we aid in the beta system that is perhaps the primary cause of global warming and is pumping toxins and poisons into our bodies and the rest of the ecosystem."
Tune in next week for another episode of Jane Goodall, Animal Rights Terrorist, when we will see Jane attempting to talk to the humans at the coffee shop, sitting closely in their environment, not saying anything, not making direct eye contact, not yet, trying not to frighten them. Our next guest is Sherwood Ross.
This is Chuck Gregory. I'd like to apologize for the technical issues encountered during this, our first show in the new time slot. We hope the rest are better. I've already made an edit. The interview with Andrei Volchek, I spliced in from our from the recording, because as it went out on the air, it didn't sound as good. Unfortunately, everything from Mike's intro of Sherwood Ross on to the end of the show is totally lost. So at this point, I'm going to play the remaining interview segments that we have on pre-recording. So here we go with Phil Perugio.
And now from Port Orange, Florida, with stops at Information Clearinghouse, World News Trust, and many others, we're proud to welcome Phil Perugio with It's the Empire, Stupid!
Okay, the sad, sad karma of empire. Good evening, working stiffs. When the victors of World War I, including the quickly dying British Empire and the up-and-coming American one, chose to push the Versailles Diktat on Germany, the seeds for radical government were planted. The Third Reich was a bad karma to the nth degree, resulting from the overbearing decisions at Versailles. Of course, our empire, with its corporate boosters, profited the most from the Nazi horror, while our European allies were being beaten down by it. along with, of course, the multitude of innocent Jews, communists, socialists, trade unionists, etc. Those who know the truth of history realize that World War II helped nurture our current American empire. Then, being like a superstar athlete on mega steroids, America became America with a K, with our imperial machinations causing a Cold War. Read Stone and Kuznick's The Untold History of the United States. And from this, our disastrous venture into Vietnam. Yet, we as a nation learned nothing from the Vietnam debacle. Our military-industrial empire just chugged along from one overseas action to another, while the fat cat war industry and the Pentagon grew into monsters. Ever ask yourself why our American culture becomes more and more violent every day? Child psychologists can tell you that when the parent is a bully to the child grows up into one as well. When the parent, as role model or lack of one, reveals a life of rage and violence, the child is more apt to parrot that way of living. Read Elizabeth Holzman and Cynthia Cooper's 2012 book, Cheating Justice, How Bush and Cheney Attacked the Rule of Law and Plotted to Avoid Prosecution, and begin to understand how rot from the top seeps down. It began with the phony and orchestrated lies to justify preemptive war on Iraq, and then the terrible occupation with blatant use of torture, more often than not on individuals later deemed innocent of anything. Their book covers the deceptions and outright crimes of trying to use legal mumbo-jumbo to circumvent the Geneva Accords and the U.S. War Crimes Act of 1996. Men like John Yoo, Jay Bybee, and Alberto Gonzalez wrote these at the request of Cheney, Rumsfeld, and, of course, Junior Bush, if they even took the time to tell that jackass about it. Bybee got his just reward by becoming a federal judge. Wu got his with a professorship, and Fredo, Bush Jr.'s lapdog attorney general, got his as, are you ready for this? The dean of law at Belmont University. The dean of law. Alas, the terrible deeds done by all these men, and of course the phony Condi Rice, are, to this writer, resonating with our nation's increased culture of violence and, quote, what's in it for me mentality of many of our young folks. When people see, and more importantly, sense, that our leaders are literally getting away with murder, or that our corporation fat cats are getting mega rich at their expense, shit happens. Do any of you out there actually think that groups like ISIS would ever exist if not for what America did in Afghanistan and Iraq? Would suicide bombers be so prevalent in Israel if that nation did not continue to treat the Palestinians as they have for over 60-plus years? Thus, I make the same bold statement concerning the crazy country we now live in. Yes, there will always be violent, unstable individuals who will do harm to others for no rational reason. Yet, when it is so continuous, we need to see how much bad karma this empire has accrued. Food for thought. Thank you.
This is Chuck Gregory again. Unfortunately, the only part of the rest of the show that we have is the pre-recorded interview with Mickey Z, and I'm going to include it right now.
Well, it's the beginning of another month, and we welcome back to the show Mickey Z from Astoria, New York.
Hey, Chuck. Great to be here.
Well, great to have you here. So, been pretty hot in the city up there?
Yeah, overall it hasn't been the hottest summer, but the past couple of weeks have. And when it decides to be hot, it's been extremely uncomfortable. Incredible humidity and all. But nothing compared to what I'm reading in other places like Iran right now with the heat index, it's over 150 degrees. So it's there are no consistent patterns anymore, it seems, with climate change.
Yeah, it sure does seem that way. It's something like 87 here. I don't know. It's not too bad.
Okay. Yeah, you guys are much better at dealing with the heat than we are. We complain throughout late June into August. It's just nonstop complaining about the heat. And I don't know if you've ever been on a New York City subway when it's hot out, but it's like a steam room.
Well, that doesn't sound like much fun at all.
No.
So has that Has that kept down the events, the activism?
No, it seems like there's been a steady flow, particularly, unfortunately, because of the never-ending police violence, it seems, across the country. So even if events don't happen here in New York City, for example, the death of Sandra Bland in Texas, there are events related to that. And also during the month of July marked the 1 year anniversary of Eric Garner, African-American man that was held in a chokehold by a New York City police officer and died, was murdered, and it was videotaped, and yet that officer wasn't indicted. So there was there were events surrounding the 1 year anniversary of that. And I know that August 9th marks 1 year since the murder of Michael Brown in Ferguson, which you could make, you know, which in one way or another launched the literal Black Lives Matter movement. Of course, didn't launch anti-police brutality movement, but the specific Black Lives Matter movement, I believe, is coming up on its 1 year anniversary. So I know there'll be stuff in New York related to that, and I'm assuming there'll be stuff all across the globe because of how that was such a trigger point for a focal point for people just being fed up with this white supremacist police force that we have in the U.S.
Did you participate in any of the events, the Black Lives? Well, around Eric Garner.
Yes, I did go. His murder happened on Staten Island, which is one of the five boroughs here in New York. And so some people met during the day on the exact spot. But the larger event, which I was able to make, was at Columbus Circle, which is at the tip of Central Park. And it was pretty well attended, speakers and so on. I noticed an interesting phenomenon there, something that I wrote about and took some heat for, in that the paradigm, the white supremacist paradigm within mainstream America, unfortunately, is often repeated and replicated within activism circles. And I was there with my camera, trying to take in photographs to see what's going on. And I noticed that not only was the crowd more white people than people of color, but the loudest participants seem to be white men, and the ones more likely to get right up in the face of the many, many, many cops that were there were white men. So, and I found it really disturbing because, as I'm sure your listeners would realize, if a white man is screaming in the face of a New York City cop, the odds are against an immediate arrest or any type of violence happening, but that cop is a human being. He's getting angered. He's getting attacked. So where is that anger and that rage going to be vented? They're going to wind up arresting or hurting a person of color, which seems to be the way they do it. And no sooner did the first speaker take the microphone, and I was standing up on a fence trying to get a full shot, and I'm watching this happen, then a bunch of cops wade into the crowd and immediately arrest an African-American man. And while I was there, I saw no indication of why that arrest was happening. And as they're taking them away in handcuffs, the people again yelling and yelling and yelling at the cops were more white men than anything else, like screaming, shame, shame, the whole world is watching. And this exhibitionism and this need to make it about themselves was kind of frustrating to watch. And it culminated when an activist white man again showed up, and I guess in what he meant was to make this grand statement, where he showed up carrying a Confederate flag, which of course has been in the news a lot lately, and he painted onto the Confederate flag words like NYPD, New York Police Department, equal Nazis. And he stood in front of a big row of cops holding this sign. And as you might imagine, whatever media was there, whether it was independent or larger, photographers and so on, that were paying attention to the speakers, which included people who knew Eric Garner and very important speakers, immediately turned around and started paying attention to this photo op, taking pictures. And around that point, I was when I split, because I just was not enjoying that vibe. And I started writing about it a bit on social media, and it was met with some appreciation, but a lot of people, particularly white people, were upset that I was somehow policing how they should behave at a Black Lives Matter event. Well, I didn't say anything in the moment, It wasn't my place. But afterward, I thought it was a valid critique that if you come to an event that's about a very specific experience that you don't live, then the best thing to do is figure out how to be an ally and how to support and not put the focus on yourself. For example, at some of these rallies, you'll see white people marching with their hands up, saying, "Hands up, don't shoot." Or in the case of an Eric Garner rally where he said many, many times on video, "I can't breathe," because he was being choked, people chant, "I can't breathe." And when it's not, when it's people of color, I believe they're expressing an experience. When it's white people, I feel like they're appropriating an experience. And so it's something I've been struggling with as to how to be a better ally and supporter of such an important movement. And I feel very strongly that people at these movements, particularly white people, shouldn't be putting the focus right back on them and taking up the most space and yelling over people. We need to figure out ways to support movements like this as true allies.
Well, let me just play devil's advocate a little bit here. They might feel that by going out there and being extremely visible, they are showing their support. They are trying to help. They're not taking over.
Oh, I don't think any one of them are consciously saying, "Oh, great, a Black Lives Matter rally, let me take over." I think they're acting out of almost an unconscious sense of privilege where, and I'm speaking from the position of a white person, so particularly a white man, where typically our voices are given more attention, are more focus. We are allowed to be louder. We are allowed to take up more space. And I don't think that anyone was maliciously trying to sabotage the rally. But when it's not a complicated thought to think that if the majority of people being arrested at these rallies are people of color, so if you're a white person screaming and antagonizing in the face of a cop, that your venting of rage could directly, and in many cases very likely, lead to a person of color being arrested, because someone's going to pay. Police seem to have unlimited power, so if you're screaming in their face and angering them, somebody's going to pay for it, and statistically, it's not going to be the white person. And doing something exhibitionist-like, like the Confederate flag, I think just confuses the issue here. And even mentioning Nazis, which really wasn't color-based, persecution also. It just seems like a lot of metaphors were getting mixed, and there was really no reason for people to put on this type of show as opposed to showing up, being there, telling friends about it, marching, chanting, whatever it might be, sharing it the next day, telling people what you learned. I think there's many, many productive ways to be an ally. And what I've been witnessing at these events since this movement started, and it really blew up in New York, say, October of last year, I've witnessed too many examples of people of color once again not being the focus of these events. And that kind of drives home the point of what's going on here, because when people of color are being shot by police, so many people are looking for reasons to justify it. Well, he shouldn't have resisted arrest, or he shouldn't have done this, or he shouldn't have done that. And I want to hear those voices. I want to learn from those experiences. I don't have those experiences, so I do my best to remain silent. And it's an ideal time for me to play the role of photographer, where I could just try to document what I see. But then the next day on social media, I'm going to be more outspoken as a writer, saying, "Hey, this is what I saw. What do you guys think of it?" And as I said, I had some people getting upset that somehow I was policing their behavior, when really I was asking questions, and I stand by the questions as valid.
Well, I think the questions are most definitely valid, and really I agree with you, even though I'm arguing the other side a little bit just for interest. But let me ask you this: how could a backing up. Often activists attend an event with the intention of getting themselves arrested in order to make a statement. Is there any way that the white activists who are really, you know, gung-ho and wanting to make something happen can go out there and do something that won't get transferred to the blacks?
I'm totally with you on that question, because that's one of the things that I was pondering, and I believe I mentioned it in on social media, that I found I was trying to conceive of a moment where, when the cops begin to wade into a crowd and targeting people of color, imagine if these white allies locked arms and tried to block the police so that maybe these individuals that were being targeted had a chance to get away. Now, some of those white people would take arrest for that. It could be obstruction of justice. There's a million different charges that they could face for that. And I think you hit on a very important point. If someone is willing to take the arrest not necessarily seeking to be arrested, but understanding that their actions could lead to arrest, I think that's an interesting concept, and it's a powerful way to be an ally, because the way that the so-called justice system is set up, it seems like everything people of color do is criminalized. And so they target people at such a young age to get them in the system, while that's not the case with white people. So if black people are afraid that they come to a Black Lives Matter protest, they're going to be arrested, and then suddenly they're in the system, because they're way more likely to be stopped and frisked or stopped while driving. And every time your name is in the system, I can only imagine that it just adds to the likelihood that you're going to be charged with something or face violence from the police. So if those arrests aren't happening at a higher rate because white people are trying to physically prevent it or are taking the arrest, I think that would be an interesting approach. And I would wonder if there would be in the planning stages of these Black Lives Matter events, if that's something that could be brought up. But I think you bring an excellent point up, because it would be essential that you'd be performing such an essential duty. You're there showing your physical support by being there. But if you could stop, if there's one less black person arrested because of you, then I would say that, wow, what an amazing gesture to perform at a Black Lives Matter protest.
Well, I think that is a wonderful idea. And of course, that just about brings us to the end of our interview. But it's a good note to close.
I concur, and I think that I hope that it'll give some food for thought for those listening and stuff that they can share and talk with others about.
Absolutely. Before we close, hopefully this will make it on the air, tell the listeners about your new book.
Thank you. Occupy These Photos will be released by Sullivan Street Press on September 8th. But for those who follow me on whatever social media you use, Mickey Z, you'll find information. I'll be posting it increasingly more, and I will be putting it up on my blog soon. It's available for pre-order as an e-book. So basically, just look for me at whatever typical websites or I write for World News Trust. You can find information for me there in my bio. Basically, find me on my social media sites. Look up information. You'll see information about Occupy These Photos, which is a collection of images I've taken from New York City activism over the past 3.5 years. And it's available now for pre-order. And there will be a hard copy available later in the year. And any and all support and just spreading the word and so on is very much appreciated.
Well, great. Thank you very much. And we'll talk to you next month.
Thanks. It's a pleasure as always.
All right. Bye-bye.
That concludes another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We apologize for having only a short recording, but at least we got in our guests. Once again, we apologize for technical issues, and things should be a lot better from here on. Please keep listening to our recordings and our podcasts, and we thank you for coming back. Chuck Gregory signing off for the New American Dream Radio Show.